Good thing the Chicago Board of Trade doesn't look like the New York Stock Exchange right now. Have you seen the Dow today? Ouch. That's as the president is upping the ante, hinting at a long-term trade war, saying China won't be able to hurt American farmers. But do farmers agree? We're about to find out.
Live from Sparkle City, USA, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, it's a farmer forum with panelists Dennis Wentworth, Brandon Batten, and Anthony Mock. And right after the news, a quick chat with AgPro Magazine's Margie Eckelkamp. Feel free to join the conversation, 855-4-TALK-AG. That's 855-482-5524. Or send us a tweet, hashtag it AgriTalk. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now, sitting in for Chip Flory, here's your host, the lovely Tyne Morgan. Good morning, Tyne.
Good morning. I want to be in Sparkle City. It is raining in Kansas City at our Kansas City studios right now. Davis, no sparkles outside whatsoever.
Gorgeous morning here in Central Iowa. Having a great day so far.
Areas needed it. To our west in Kansas, they got pummeled with rain last week. They did not need the rain. But on the eastern side, I mean, there were some fields that were needing a drink, and they are getting it today.
Good, good. Yeah, we're a little dry up here, if I'm going to be picky. You know, there's some cracks in the dirt, and we could use a good soaker. Thought we were going to get it. I even washed my Jeep, thinking it would maybe help, but no avail. Just a trace.
That's usually inevitable.
I know, right?
Go through the car wash, it's going to happen. I did wash my car yesterday, so I guess I can be thanked for the rain. There goes that $10.
Yeah, way to go. Well, if nothing else, you know, I'm thinking about maybe tonight when I get home from work, I'll wax it in the driveway and see if I just needed to go the extra mile.
Yeah, I think that will put the finishing touches on the rain that you need. Well, we do have a nice panel lined up today, Davis. Excited because we have farmers from all different areas. You know, we have a farmer in Illinois from an area that the crop actually looks really good. And I think we'll see that on crop tour in the middle of Illinois this year. But then we have a farmer from North Carolina who, you know, we've talked a lot about the trade war, Davis.
Yes.
But he grows a crop that really domestic demand has faded, gone away. And so they rely on exports. It's tobacco. And they lost their Chinese market and lost that demand. And so they're really feeling it. And tobacco is not a crop that's covered under the next round of market facilitation program payments.
Okay. Interesting.
And then we have a farmer in North Dakota who, you know, they've, of course, we know the story there, the impact that it's had on bases. So good mix of folks. We'll check out crop conditions. We'll see what they have to say. Plus, I had an email in for U.S. Farm Report on if all this market facilitation program payments that she agrees that we should support farmers, but thinks these MFP payments are socialism. And so I'll get their take.
That is an interesting take. I believe that there is an argument to be made there, at least intellectually. But on the ground, you know, we got to do something here.
Right. Yeah. No, the pain is there and we're hearing it. We're seeing it. But talk about the pain in the stock market today. My goodness, Davis, what else? Is there any good news going on today?
Well, I don't know. I've written a term paper basically today about what's going on with the China stuff. Let me get to it. According to U.S. Treasury data, the United States collected $63 billion in Chinese tariffs in the 12 months between June 2018 and the 1st of July 19. The U.S. is on track to collect as much as $72 billion in tariffs annually. And some believe that number could reach $100 billion if President Trump's next wave of threatened tariffs are enacted on September 1. But optimism that a deal can be reached is fading quickly. Some insiders are calling President Trump's confrontational tone with China a big policy mistake, and many believe China will not acquiesce to U.S. demands for economic and business-related reforms demanded by negotiators. Former economic negotiator with the Chinese delegation at the United Nations, Charles Liu, told Bloomberg News, quote, "It is unlikely China will buckle to any further pressure as they are convinced dealing with the current U.S. administration gives them an inch when they want a foot." China's People's Daily newspaper printed yesterday, quote, "China's consistent position is that we don't wish to fight, but we don't fear a fight. When the time comes, we'd have no choice but to fight." Meanwhile, you've got Economic Council Director Larry Kudlow upbeat in comments to reporters, saying the meeting in September with Chinese negotiators, quote, "could lead to good things." This is really interesting here because you've got the Chinese side apparently seemingly digging in their heels, and the Trump administration has been equally unwilling to budge. Your thoughts, Tyne?
I mean, I think we've heard the president, and I mentioned it, the president saying that, you know, hinting at market facilitation program payments next year, saying that if this trade war does go on, that he's willing to continue to support farmers. And like I had one analyst tell me the other day, he's putting his money where his mouth is, and that China, they think, is actually a bipartisan issue, that you're pulling support from both sides of the aisle on this. And so if you have political capital to work with, as well as some MFP payments to kind of help, you know, tide over farmers while they're feeling this pain, then maybe he doesn't have to rush to make a deal, and he can continue to last this out to get all the issues worked through that the U.S. wants to get worked through. Yeah. This analyst told me, unlike prior administrations that get two things and say, all right, that's going to be the best we can do. Let's walk away.
Right.
He's in it for the long haul. We will see if that's the case.
Yep. Well, meanwhile, sources do indicate President Trump is potentially readying ongoing financial support for farmers impacted by the trade war. And while USDA officials have declined to comment on the matter, there are murmurs of a possible third round of MFP payments in 2020 if a resolution is not reached. On that note, the president tweeted, quote, "Our great American farmers know that China will not be able to hurt them in that their president has stood with them and done what no other president would do. And I'll do it again next year if necessary." Larry Kudlow echoed that sentiment, calling farmers patriots, adding, quote, "God bless them. We're helping them as much as possible. We'll help them more if we need, and we'll see how the negotiations go." Tyne, let's end it on that note.
Davis, I appreciate it. A lot of news to cover as we head into harvest, and a lot of uncertainty, you know, as we head into harvest, not only with crop conditions, but what's going to happen with this trade war. I mean, we thought that we would have a resolution. The first timeline was March was kind of that timeline, and then it kind of goes back, and now there's really no timeline in place. I mean, we are kind of at no man's land when it comes to when we will see this end.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Looks like we've got Margie Echocamp standing by.
We do, and we'll explore what if this trade war lasts through 2020. We're going to explore that this weekend on U.S. Farm Report. But speaking of harvest, we have Margie Echocamp of Ag Pro. Margie, you know, as retailers are gearing up for harvest, you've seen some great examples of what they can do to really make sure all of the ducks are in a row.
Yeah, no doubt. Good morning, Ty. No doubt that planting 2019 was a bumpy ride for most, if not all, and looking to smooth things out for harvest. And one such tool and example would be how Landis Cooperative is using technology. And Landis Cooperative has more than 7,000 farmer members based in Ames, Iowa, but also serves farmers in Minnesota. They have 55 locations that receive and store grain. So they have launched a new web portal as well as phone app. It's back in September of 2018. And since then, they've actually seen four times as many farmers engage with these new technology tools than their previous platform. So what do these tools offer? Well, they offer farmers to be able to look at their current positions, payments and settlements, cash bids, futures, as well as receiving time. So I mentioned those 55 grain locations, all of which are reporting scale-to-scale times. So scale in and scale out, and how long that process is taking for farmers, as well as about 12 to 14 locations have cameras on the grain lines. So farmers are able to go in and see what is their time at those different elevators and be able to assess, do I take grain here or do I take grain there to really maximize efficiency this harvest.
It's hard to think about harvest, but we'll talk about it next.
We're joined today by Joan Ruskamp, past chairman of the Cattlemen's Beef Board, to talk about what your dollar does to promote demand for beef. Joan, what's new with the beef checkoff?
Thanks for having me on. According to our most recent producer survey, 80% of producers today say the checkoff drives demand for beef. So I'd like to share some of the ways we're doing that. One example is foreign marketing. We're exporting about $8 billion worth of beef overseas. That's huge, especially considering how we've opened up markets in Asia, creating value for producers around $320 per head slaughtered. Additionally, the checkoff has helped boost retail meat case sales to a six-year high, with strong demand expected to continue through 2019. We also launched a campaign to showcase real ways the checkoff is using producer dollars to drive demand. It's called Your Dollar Does. You can learn more and sign up for the newsletter at drivingdemandforbeef.com.
That's great, Joan. Thanks for joining us from the Cattlemen's Beef Board. To learn more, go to drivingdemandforbeef.com, funded by the Beef Checkoff.
Farm Journal is bringing Hemp College to Altoona, Iowa on September 17th. This one-day farmer-focused conference will get you on the right production path with information on the best agronomic practices for hemp production, marketing, legal considerations, and policy news. Interact with growers and industry experts to gather answers to all your hemp questions. Our last Hemp College sold out, so don't miss your chance to attend. Register today at agweb.com/events/hempcollege.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture is what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
This is Brian Grady, Pro Farmer Editor and AgriTalk Market Analyst, inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers and what to watch tomorrow with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio to start today. Unbiased and free of advertisements, you'll get our detailed, time-tested advice for cash marketers and futures and options users, along with our premium analysis to give you the information that you need. Visit profarmer.com/radio right now to start your free month. It's fast and easy to start, and there's no long-term commitment.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, farmer-focused podcast that's all about production agriculture. Farming the Countryside is available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts and is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
Welcome back to AgriTalk on this Wednesday. I'm Tyne Morgan, filling in for Chip Flory for this Farmer Forum, and we'll really get a taste of farmer sentiments really across the country today. We have Dennis Whitworth, a farmer in Illinois, Brandon Batten, a farmer in North Carolina, and Anthony Mock, a farmer in North Dakota. A lot of different crops being represented on the show today, a lot of different sentiments being represented on the show today. But Dennis, we'll start with you. I know that it's kind of a rocky start to the planting season, but you did get in the field. You got your crops planted, and now setting here in the beginning of August, how do things look?
You know, to drive down the road, Tyne, things here in central Illinois, McLean County, southeast part, and that's how specific it is. They look good. I think if we look at five-year averages, we'll struggle to make five-year averages, but compared to, say, the northern part of McLean County and northern part of Illinois, Indiana and Ohio, we've got a real nice-looking crop.
Yeah, Dennis, how far do you have to go to run into some of those areas where they didn't get all their crop in this year?
I would say within 20 miles. And actually
really?
Here, yes, actually you can drive around Bloomington, Illinois, and find a couple of three fields that took prevent plant for whatever reason. I don't know the specific reasons for those operators' decisions, but certainly you can see some fields, individual fields around, but not like what you would see in other areas.
And the fact of the matter is, I mean, Dennis, when you're standing in some of that cropland, it's some of the most fertile soil in the U.S., right? I mean, you are standing on some prime ground that, for some, did not get planted this year.
Right, that's right. And of course, the carryover with that is that the high cash rents, the high input costs, and all those expenses that are already out of pocket, even back at planting time, to say, well, we don't plant and we're going to save all this money. You still had a lot of that money out of pocket.
Considering how late of a planting season it was for many, I mean, I talked to a farmer, a friend in northern Illinois of yours, that for the first time in his life did not plant at all in May. Set idle all of May because he just could not get in the field because of the rain. Considering how late some planted, I mean, harvest-wise, when do you think you'll get into the field this year?
I think with corn, we'll be at least a week, if not 2 weeks later. So that's the beginning of the corn harvest isn't what I'm concerned about. It's that June planted corn that we ended up planting, you know, whatever, 45 days later. That was more of a concern. And then the soybeans, the later planted soybeans, late May, early June soybean plantings. So those are going to struggle to get ripe here in central Illinois before a frost comes along.
Yeah, sitting here in Missouri, you know, floodwater just escaped some of the fields, and farmers were planting soybeans a week ago. It is just crazy how late that this crop is. But when you look at your area of Illinois, I know Ken Ferry, a Farm Journal agronomist, has been very vocal about, you know, you need to think of when it comes to drying this crop, if we're going to be harvesting into December, January for some, you need to be thinking about plan B, plan C, plan D. I mean, have you looked into locking in drying costs, anything to help with what could be a very wet crop this year?
Yes, we've looked into that, and so far the elevators have suggested that they're sticking with the drying costs that they've got. That, you know, if the crop is as wet as they say, they're going to generate plenty of drying income. They're not going to have to raise the rates to generate drying income. That actually, two things. Number one, they'll probably get full of wet corn, and so that's going to take care of itself. Number two, I think overall, there's not very many elevators that right now say we're going to be chuck full. We don't know where we're going to put the corn. I think most elevators are more concerned about attracting enough grain to fill the storage that they've got right now.
Anthony, up in North Dakota, in your part of the world, I mean, when you look at crop conditions, I know it was a struggle. Did you get all of your crop planted this year?
For the most part, yeah, we did. I mean, we did. We had some prevent plant, but right in our area, it wasn't a lot, I guess. You know, we were out early. We were wet and cold, and you know, but our crop isn't the greatest. I mean, it looks good for what's there, but we didn't. Our stands aren't there just because of the cold. We had poor germination, and you know, which is going to hurt us. But you know, we've been wet. So, you know, that's going to take care of it. So I think we'll come out with an average crop this year.
How is the crop maturing? I mean, when you look at some of that late planted crop, when do you think you'll get in the field to harvest? I mean, have you guys had enough heat units lately, or is that really a concern of yours?
Yeah, it is. You know, I mean, we're cooling off now. We were getting dry. We did get some rain last night, so that's going to help us. You know, we were earlier on our planting, and you know, so that's going to help us a little bit. But there's a lot of corn that, you know, is going to be late, and I don't think some of it's going to make it. You know, what that percentage is, I don't know.
You know, up in your area, I know you're used to kind of sometimes, unfortunately, a late harvest, and because of the weather challenges that you have. But harvesting a wet crop in your area, I mean, have you heard some concerns about that? Have you been talking to your local elevator? Kind of what's the sentiment up there when it comes to how late this crop could be?
Oh, yeah, we have, you know, and I don't know. You know, it's going to vary, like, with the early stuff that got planted, you know, and you know, we're a long ways, you know, we're an end user type farm operation, you know, so we're going to the ethanol plant, you know, and which is quite a ways away, but you know, we're just hoping and praying that, you know, we're gonna be dry enough that, you know, and be dry enough to be able to deliver, you know, and if we have to dry some, we gotta dry some, but we're just, you know, it's there's a lot of uncertainty out there.
Definitely.
I guess.
Well, now let's head out to North Carolina and Brandon Batten joining us. And I know, you know, there's been some tropical storms in the southeast. The southeast area had started off so dry, and then it seems like some rains have happened since, and maybe too much rain in some areas. But what have growing conditions been like for you, Brandon?
Yeah, Tom, thanks for having me. We were wet early too. We were about 2 weeks late getting started planting corn. Then we kind of caught up, and we were really terribly hot and dry in May, which is unusual. We always get hot and dry, but it's usually July and August. So that kind of slowed things down, and just it really put a hurting on the young crops. You know, rain has been spotty in my area. Our soils are excessively drained, we'll say. you know, in my particular 20-mile radius, we could use some rain. All around us has kind of been getting some afternoon thunderstorms, so our turn's coming. Generally, I would say the corn crop just depends on the water. If you got water, it looks really good. If you didn't, it looks terrible. Our tobacco crop is, you know, tobacco is a very resilient crop and can handle drought better than most. Looks pretty pretty good. It's a little bit on the late side, but and our beans look decent as well.
Yeah, and you spoke a little to it, but you're pretty diverse. What all crops do you grow out there, Brandon?
So on our operation, we've got flue-cured tobacco, corn. We got some winter wheat, soybeans. We've got grass hay and some beef cattle, and we also are dabbling in industrial hemp on a very small scale this year.
So out of all those crops, kind of what looks the best and what looks the worst?
You know, the tobacco crop looks really good. I think we've got a good quality crop and a decent yielding crop. I've got some corn that just burned up, you know, in June when we got, you know, 4 weeks of no rain and 100-plus degree temperatures. You know, we may pick 50 bushels on some of our corn. Luckily, it's not all like that. But generally speaking, you know, I would say the tobacco conditions are good. Soybean conditions are average or slightly above, and the corn is just, I would say, average or slightly below.
And real quick, I mean, harvest-wise, I know it sounds like you had a little bit of a spread there when you could plant. It started off too wet, then it turned off dry. But do you think a normal harvest time frame for you out there?
Yeah, I think so. We made up for our heat units. You know, we hardly ever have any trouble getting enough heat. Our trouble is getting enough water to keep the crops alive and moving. We'll probably start in corn, if not the end of this month, you know, Labor Day. We're harvesting tobacco right now, actually, just getting going good in that. And that'll last through the end of September. And then we'll start in beans in October or whenever we can get a frost to kill the vines down on some of the later beans.
And Brandon, really quick, kind of what are your sentiments? Sounds like harvest is already here. So what are your sentiments heading into harvest?
Yeah, I'm generally an optimist, and this is an exciting time. But I've been telling everybody, it's just hard to get excited about, especially in the tobacco crop harvest this year. With all the issues we're facing and the outlook ahead, it's just been kind of hard to get excited about.
Hard to get excited, something we've heard about from a lot of producers. But do Anthony and Dennis feel that way? I mean, the Ag Economy Barometer skyrocketed last month. Is that true for everyone? We'll find out more producer sentiments when we come back on AgriTalk.
We're joined today by Joan Ruskamp, past chairman of the Cattlemen's Beef Board, to talk about what your dollar does to promote demand for beef. Joan, what's new with the Beef Checkoff?
Thanks for having me on. According to our most recent producer survey, 80% of producers today say the checkoff drives demand for beef. So I'd like to share some of the ways we're doing that. One example is foreign marketing. We're exporting about $8 billion worth of beef overseas. That's huge, especially considering how we've opened up markets in Asia, creating value for producers around $320 per head slaughtered. Additionally, the checkoff has helped boost retail meat case sales to a six-year high, with strong demand expected to continue through 2019. We also launched a campaign to showcase real ways the checkoff is using producer dollars to drive demand. It's called Your Dollar Does. You can learn more and sign up for the newsletter at drivingdemandforbeef.com.
That's great, Joan. Thanks for joining us from the Cattlemen's Beef Board. To learn more, go to driving.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And our expert today, Brian Grady of Pro Farmer. Brian, we are seeing some red on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, but boy, am I glad it does not look like the New York Stock Exchange right now.
Yeah, it's been a struggle to find buyers, Tyne, but we're only down a penny or two in both corn and soybeans right now. A little bit heavier losses in the wheat market. Just not much fresh news out there that would be supportive at this point in time. And kind of a mixed look at the near-term weather forecast. No oppressive heat, scattered rains, but nothing widespread. And you know, as a result, the trade is just kind of numb. We also have USDA's reports coming up next Monday. And I don't think that there's really any urgency for traders to put on new positions at this point in time.
Yeah, we did see some pre-report trade estimates out. Were those higher than you thought, lower than you thought? I mean, how does that set the sentiment heading into this report on Monday?
Well, there's a lot of uncertainty. The ranges are pretty wide on some of those categories, especially on the carryovers. So I think that just a whole lot of uncertainty in terms of what USDA say. They resurveyed, obviously, for acreage in 14 of the states. So that's a number that will be watched pretty readily. FSA certified acreage data is also out that morning at 11 o'clock. So that'll give us the first glimpse of what the prevent plant numbers are for both corn and soybeans. So, you know, a lot of data coming at the market and a lot of key data that could move the market significantly next Monday.
A lot of numbers to digest. And if they want to hear more information or find out more about ProFarmer, where can they go?
www.profarmer.com. And, you know, you can sign up for a one-month trial at tryprofarmer.com.
All right. We'll be back with AgriTalk next.
This is Brian Grady, Pro Farmer Editor and AgriTalk Market Analyst, inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers and what to watch tomorrow with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio to start today. Unbiased and free of advertisements, you'll get our detailed, time-tested advice for cash marketers and futures and options users, along with our premium analysis to give you the information that you need. Visit profarmer.com/radio right now to start your free month. It's fast and easy to start, and there's no long-term commitment.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
The 2019 Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour is coming soon. Kicking off August 19th, watch for extensive coverage on air and online. The premier sponsor of Crop Tour is Pioneer, with support from IBM, RCIS, RAM, AeroVironment, Titan Tires, Farm Mobile, and Farm Credit Services of America.
Well, before we get back into our farmer forum today, the Pro Farmer Crop Tour, as Chip had mentioned, it's coming up August 19th through the 22nd. I'll be on Crop Tour, so will Chip, Brian, Clinton Griffiths. I mean, everyone will be on Crop Tour this year. And you can take part in it, too. There's still seats available for the evening events where you can hear firsthand from some of the scouts and some of the Pro Farmer experts, not only on what they saw, but how they think it could impact them, the markets moving forward. Very timely information that you'll get firsthand. It's August 19th through the 22nd. We have stops in places like Noblesville, Indiana, Tremont, Illinois, Coralville, Iowa, Spencer, Iowa, Rochester, Minnesota. If you would like to get your seat, you can actually do that by going to profarmer.com/register, or you can call 888-582-9212. That's 888-582-9212 to guarantee your seat for the Pro Farmer Crop Tour this year. Always a fun evening event. All right, jumping back into our Farmer Forum. Dennis, the Purdue University CME Ag Economy Barometer that we watch every month really gauges producer sentiments, and it skyrocketed in July. It jumped to 153. That's 27 points higher than June and 52 points higher than May. So producer sentiment skyrocketed, but that's before the president upped the ante when it comes to the trade war last week. That's before we heard about the latest round of market facilitation program payments, the details surrounding that. So it seems like maybe those sentiments, we've seen the roller coaster of emotions producers are on, and we're already maybe going to the downside of some of those producer sentiments, even since this barometer was taken and released. But kind of what is your feeling as a farmer in Illinois, sitting on a pretty decent crop this year? Kind of what are your thoughts right now?
I think number one, learned a long time ago, what the government gives, the market takes away. You might want to write that down, Tyne. So, you know, the MFP for this crop, you know, he talked about that months ago. And so that's just been, it's kind of been hanging over. Never used that in any spreadsheets as far as our gross income for the year. I think, you know, until about 10 days ago, we were able to manage our gross income with sales and the improvement in futures prices. Basis levels have improved dramatically here in Central Illinois. So, you know, our gross income had stayed pretty well. The last 10 days, then, you know, our projected gross income is down, down significantly, you know, probably the $100,000 that hopefully, you know, will, you know, MFP payments here before the end of the year. So I think more of a concern isn't the payments. I think it's just the loss of markets that take a long time to recover. And that's hanging over the market. The market knows it. We still have big carryovers, and those carryover numbers aren't in the right locations. And you and I have talked about that over the last 2 months. Basis levels, it just depends on where you're at. We have real strong basis levels here because areas that don't have a decent crop need to attract bushels into their areas. And so people in our area, processors in our area, are keeping their basis very strong so those bushels don't leave here prior to harvest. So right now, the MFP is really not the story. The story is farmers don't want a government handout. They want markets. They want to sell cash prices.
Right. And as you mentioned, it's not just a demand problem, it's a supply problem. And, you know, we won't know what the real supply story is this year. We've talked about it on U.S. Farm Report. Chip's talked about it on AgriTalk that, you know, it may be until late harvest, maybe even January, until we really know the story this year, because the crop is just so variable and so late. Dennis mentioned the basis. And Anthony, you were in an area in North Dakota where basis has been struggling now for more than a year.
Yeah, we are. I mean, and basis has always kind of been a problem in North Dakota, but, you know, it's really hard, you know. I mean, your elevators are sitting on it longer now, and you know, just so much uncertainty, and with moving this, the bean crop especially, it's a struggle.
So then what are your sentiments right now? I mean, you hear that the CME, Purdue Ag Economy Barometer, that surveys 400 producers. Producer sentiment skyrocketed, and that's kind of when the commodity markets had been responding positively, right? We had finally gotten through planting, the struggle of planting, the emotional roller coaster that producers had been on, and then prices started to respond. And then here we sit now. Questions about China. Prices are going the other direction, and it seems like sentiments have fallen fairly quickly.
Oh, yes. Yeah, they have. You know, I mean, you know, I guess we, you know, the planted acres and planting intentions and what, you know, I mean, it really, there's so much uncertainty and nobody knows where we're at. And you know, I guess it's just one of them things where it would be, we lost our upward momentum, and I don't know if we'll ever get it back. I guess that's kind of a lot of producers' feelings, you know, and uncertainty with the crop and if it's going to make it, and you know, just everything, and the China trade deal is, you know, it's for us, you know, it, you know, taking beans out of our production, you know, it's not that easy to do, you know, and we're just, you know, there's so much uncertainty.
Yeah, a lot of uncertainty when it comes to China, you know, so it sounds like for you, though, you think maybe the high in this market has already been in. I mean, is that what you fear?
Well, I mean, there's that fear. The biggest fear is what USDA is going to come out with on the 12th. You know that, you know, because it could go either way, you know, and, you know, there's a lot of talk that it will, you know, it'll benefit us, but you don't know that, you know, and protecting yourself going into it, you know, and it's just a struggle.
Well, Brandon, Brandon, in North Carolina, when you look at tobacco prices, you know, it's been a challenge for a while, and I spoke to it earlier in the show. Domestic demand has been a challenge. Your biggest customer, though, from what I understand it, was China, and now that market, is it pretty much non-existent?
Right. China's not buying any U.S. tobacco. They didn't buy any last year. Last year was especially painful because they had given indications to companies here. The companies had contracted that tobacco to be bought for China, and then China said, well, we're not going to buy it. So not only do you have an excessive inventory left over from last year that China didn't buy, they're also not buying any this year. You know, and that's kind of a pretty bleak scenario going into 2020, because even if they struck a deal today, I don't think you could get this crop moved. And China is finding other markets. Our closest competitor is Brazil. You know, they have a tremendous amount of tobacco volume, but the U.S.'s place in this market is kind of, you know, we're a premium quality, very sustainably produced crop that's not available anywhere else in the world. Our market share in the world is pretty small compared to the total, but we have something that can't be replicated anywhere else just due to the luck of the draw of our climate, our soil type, and where we are, you know, geographically. So, I'm very anxious, you know, going forward about China. If they don't come back, what does that mean for the tobacco industry? You know, if they do, at what level and what reliability? You know, that's been another issue always with China, is they say one thing and then try to do another.
Right. Yep. Same concerns in other commodities as well. You said that China has found a market when you look at South America and things, but has the U.S. found another market to supply the lost demand that we've seen from China? Are we seeing exports go somewhere else to the same extent that we saw our exports go to China?
Absolutely not. You know, the strong dollar is especially hampering our exports of tobacco, because it is such a high value crop. You know, China was really kind of a bright spot in a diminishing industry, because as their middle class grows, they want, you know, tobacco is a luxury product. It's not a necessity. So as you see that middle class grow, their demand for higher quality products grow. And that's kind of where the U.S. crop fits in. And now with that gone, they're searching other places and some of our competitors to source as close as they can get to what we provide. And there, you know, a lot of other countries, either number one, don't use enough tobacco, or number two, can't afford U.S. tobacco because of the strong dollar and because of our expensive inputs.
So what if we don't find another buyer for U.S. tobacco? What if, you know, you have to reduce your tobacco acres? What happens not only to your farm, Brandon, but also the state of North Carolina, when I know the tobacco industry is a large economic generator for that state?
Yeah. You know, I don't know. We've already seen that to some extent. If you just look back 12 months, 2018, I think USDA was forecasting something like 430 million pounds of production in flue-cured tobacco. We had two hurricanes that came through and significantly reduced that. But the same, you know, this year, at the same time, they're forecasting, you know, like 320 million pounds. So we're already down 25% in production in the U.S. You know, the lion's share of that is in North Carolina. There are other crops that we can plant, you know, but at the same time, you know, tobacco works good in our system with sweet potatoes and some other, you know, vegetable type crops. So if you take that rotation out, it changes the system and you got to find something else to put in its place.
I
think the tobacco industry is going through a shift, and we're going to see a realignment of closer to what the demand numbers are, and, you know, who knows where that shakes out to be.
Well, where Brandon is growing tobacco actually wasn't a crop that was covered under the market facilitation program. And when we look at these programs, you have three different growers here that are all seeing different amounts, different county amounts. So how do they feel about the market facilitation program payment? And I had a viewer write in that concerned that actually this MFP payment said it's a form of socialism. So do farmers agree? We'll find out when we come back on AgriTalk.
Hey, AgriTalk listeners, this is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio today. That's profarmer.com/radio.
Farm Journal is bringing Hemp College to Altoona, Iowa on September 17th. This one-day farmer-focused conference will get you on the right production path with information on the best agronomic practices for hemp production, marketing, legal considerations, and policy news. Interact with growers and industry experts and gather answers to all your hemp questions. Our last Hemp College sold out, so don't miss your chance to attend. Register today at agweb.com/events/hempcollege.
They're not the type to ask for help, the ones who beat the sun to their workday. But after floods erased generations of farmland, livestock, and crops, that resolve was shaken. It's time to show our farmers and ranchers that when waters rise, so do good people. Maybe they won't ask for help, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't answer. Donate to our farmers and ranchers at staystrongnebraska.com.
Sweet strawberry icing.
You're in Goodwill and just past that vintage denim jacket you spot. Miniature donut earrings. You lean in. Ah, that's the scent of shopping success. Because at Goodwill, every item you buy funds local job training and more. So bring home those donut earrings and bring home so much good to your community. Goodwill. Bring good home. Brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad Council.
What do you call someone who studies the weather? A climatologist. What do you call someone who evaluates investments? A financial analyst. A person who studies DNA? A geneticist. A person who owns their own business? An entrepreneur. Who researches markets? An economist. And who handles employees? An HR manager. Someone who keeps devices up to date? A software technician. Someone who does business internationally? A global trader. Someone who transfers assets from one generation to the next, an estate planner. And someone who does all these things, you call them a farmer. Because being a farmer is the one job that requires dozens of other jobs. And at Pioneer, we're proud that our job is to work with generations of American farmers in the most complex and rewarding industry on Earth. So from your friends at Pioneer, thank you, farmers.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
Find it now at ShopFarmJournal.com. Brand new to the shop is The Best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This two DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, The Best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at ShopFarmJournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at ShopFarmJournal.com.
Attention oxygen users. Are you on oxygen therapy and still using tanks? Life is hard enough struggling to breathe. Don't waste your breath on dealing with bulky, dangerous tanks.
Call 800-513-4698 now.
And try the Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator risk-free for 30 days. Tanks are a hassle. They hamper mobility and are difficult to transport, not to mention risky. The Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator is compact and makes its own oxygen, making your life easier. If you call right now, we'll send you a free information kit that outlines all the benefits. Plus, you can get a 30-day risk-free trial to see for yourself. But don't wait. This exclusive radio offer won't last. Call for your free information kit on the Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator. Ditch the hassles of tanks and experience the freedom of living a mobile life again.
Call 800-513-4698. That's 800-513-4698. 800-513-4698.
Welcome back to AgriTalk's Farmer Forum. On this Wednesday, we have Dennis Wentworth of Illinois, Brandon Batten of North Carolina, and Anthony Mock of North Dakota joining me. So when you look at market facilitation program, the Trump administration rolling out a few more details about that, and now signups underway. Well, we're actually hearing now that there's a few glitches when it comes to some of the county payments and some frustration from farmers. So we heard on social media, one farmer said that they picked up 36% more rented land this year, and their local office told them that they have to take the lesser of 2018 or 2019 planted acres. So he said, neither I or the former farmer get paid for that ground. Then we heard from another farmer that said, actually, ours was a flawless process, but they were told by their county staff that if you farmed in multiple counties or had picked up ground, it was not as simple. So we are hearing about some glitches out there, and with a program this broad and this comprehensive, you know, you could understand that there would be some issues. But, you know, Dennis, I'll start with you. When you look at this market facilitation program, have you signed up yet? Kind of what are your initial thoughts when it comes to where you are in Illinois?
There were some software issues here, and actually just called yesterday and walked through it with county office, and first schedule appointment they had available was the I think the 21st, 22nd, and so you know, have an appointment to go in. I think we had picked up another farm in another county this year, and it sounds like that'll get picked up. So we'll see. Story to be continued.
So it sounds you had to make an appointment to go in.
Oh yeah, yes. I mean, they're swamped now, trying to get things signed up.
Yeah, we knew with the reduction in staff that may be the case. Right. Anthony, where you are in North Dakota, you know, you look at a Farm Bureau map that they put together last year of the states that have been hit the hardest from the trade war. North Dakota was one of those states, and we've seen that because of the basis. We've seen it because losing that market off the Pacific Northwest. When you look at the payments that North Dakota is receiving, do you think it justifies the market that you've lost? Do you think this is a better program than 2018 or not?
Well, I guess, you know, we'll take it. We understand that it usually, you know, when it comes to a program like this, that we're not going to be, you know, one of the bigger receivers, you know, and it just kind of hurts a little bit, you know, because you think, you know, maybe you'll get a little more, but, you know, and it's just one of them things where it is what it is, and we'll take what we get, I guess, because, you know, it's pretty tough up here.
Yeah, Anthony, what's your payment compared to maybe the county over?
I farm in two counties, and we're right around that. If you average them together, we're 28 and a half, and then the next county over, I believe, is 51.
Wow. So a pretty big jump. And then, Brandon, yeah, where you are in North Carolina, we know some of the southern tier of states are seeing some of the larger MFP payments. When I talk to some economists, they say even though they may be seeing the larger payments, the bulk of the acres is in the core of the Corn Belt, and so that's where you'll kind of see the majority of the payments. But where you are, kind of how does MFP set, you know, and when you have some crops you're growing, like tobacco, that is not covered?
Right. Our MFP payments, you know, vary fairly widely, too. And at least in North Carolina, and I would say in the Southeast, it seems to kind of favor cotton counties a little more heavily than other crops. You know, we're kind of in the same boat as Anthony. I'd rather have a market than an MFP payment, but if that's the choice I get, then that's what I'll take, at least until we can get a market back. I don't budget for MFP payments, and I don't want to rely on them because I'm not sure that's a sustainable system. But we're kind of all over the place as well. Depending on the county you're in, you know, the payments can change pretty drastically.
Well, you know, with these payments, we've heard from several producers that they would like, you know, they want trade, they don't want aid. But when you look at this, it could help, you know, offset some of the losses that folks are seeing. But at the same time, you have some of those outside of agriculture that are looking and seeing these payments. Real quick, we received an email on U.S. Farm Report, and a viewer that does not farm said, you know, I think farmers should be helped. What I want is for those receiving aid to wake up and realize that socialism is the reason they are helped. She said she's followed our coverage of the trade aid payments and marvel at the lack of self-knowledge knowledge so many of its recipients have. It seems they strongly oppose the concept of socialism and vilify those that would like to see government-assisted health and human services to make them affordable for everyone. That mantra seems to be keep government out of my business. That said, how are those trade aid payments and other farming subsidies not one of the biggest forms of socialism and government handouts? You know, Dennis, when you hear something like that, what do you think? I mean, how do you make an argument to that?
I think I need to turn the radio off.
Make your blood boil?
No, you know, that's a big soapbox. They cover a lot in that one paragraph. And I guess it's frustrating, and I think they're hitting some talking points in this email, Tyne. I think and why they put socialism in quotes, I'm not quite certain. If socialism is taking from the rich and giving to the poor, I don't think that's what we're talking about with the MFP payments. I think we're talking about a government that has decided that they're going to do a trade war with another company, with another country, and they're going to take markets away from one segment of the American economy, and they're trying to compensate for that. And I think all three of us farmers have said in one way or another, we just soon get our income from the marketplace. But we're going to, if this is the game that's being played right now, that's the game we're going to play. Farmers, and I think someplace else, maybe in the last paragraph, they mentioned about for doing nothing, getting paid for doing nothing. Farmers wanted to plant their crops. That's the focus of their entire year, is putting together the best package economically, agronomically, putting the best package together for their crop to survive. And that entails planting. And that's what they look forward to every year, is planting. They're not looking forward to how can I sit and do nothing and get a government payment. So I think, you know, that would be a long argument with this person writing this email about, you know, what socialism is and you know, how are we receiving those payments? We're not receiving those payments by doing nothing.
Right. And we talked about it, the dilemma of to plant or not to plant this year when you literally could not get in the field was really what weighed on farmers this year. Well, thank you all. I wish you the best for harvest. That does it for this Wednesday edition of AgriTalk.
We're joined today by Joan Ruskamp, past chairman of the Cattlemen's Beef Board, to talk about what your dollar does to promote demand for beef. Joan, what's new with the beef checkoff?
Thanks for having me on. According to our most recent producer survey, 80% of producers today say the checkoff drives demand for beef. So I'd like to share some of the ways we're doing that. One example is foreign marketing. We're exporting about $8 billion worth of beef overseas. That's huge, especially considering how we've opened up markets in Asia, creating value for producers around $320 per head slaughtered. Additionally, the checkoff has helped boost retail meat case sales to a six-year high, with strong demand expected to continue through 2019. We also launched a campaign to showcase real ways the checkoff is using producer dollars to drive demand. It's called Your Dollar Does. You can learn more and sign up for the newsletter at drivingdemandforbeef.com.
That's great, Joan. Thanks for joining us from the Cattlemen's Beef Board. To learn more, go to drivingdemandforbeef.com, funded by the Beef Checkoff.